You are Locked On Ravens, your daily Baltimore Ravens podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
And we are back with another episode of Locked On Ravens. I am your host, Kevin Ostreicher of Ravens Wire. Help support your local businesses, whether they're your corner stores, coffee spots, or favorite shops. Local businesses have always been on your team supporting you and your community. But right now, more than ever, local businesses need our support. So let's be there for them. The next time you go shopping, make the choice to shop at local businesses and look for the contactless symbol and tap to pay with a contactless Visa to help support your community, because where and how you shop matters. Visa, everywhere you want to be. Official partner of the NFL. And we are back here. It's another victory week here on Locked On Ravens. A victory Monday here today as the Ravens defeat the Cincinnati Bengals by the final score of 27-3. Now, it could have been 27-0. It could have been. The Ravens going to pitch the shutout, but the Bengals get a late field goal there at the end to secure a not shutout for them. And it was a dominant performance by the defense. It was the defensive show for Baltimore. 3 turnovers, 5 sacks by defensive backs, 7 in total for the Ravens. I mean, this was a dominant defensive performance. Now, on the offensive side of the ball, it was a tale of quarters. In the first quarter, the Ravens put up 17 points, or I should say in the first quarter and then 4 seconds of the second quarter. By the time 4 seconds had ticked off in the second quarter, it was 17-0 Baltimore. The offense was humming, touchdowns to Mark Andrews and Marquise Brown. But after that, the Ravens as a team only were able to muster 10 points. 7 of those which came by the defense. So really, the offense only able to muster 3 points for the remaining 3 quarters of this game. And honestly, that's a pretty weird thing for this Ravens offense, especially with how high-powered it was last year, the running game, and we'll get into the play calling and everything offense here in this first segment. But overall, this was a defensive show. The Ravens, just as they've done with, I've said, the rookie, second-year, third-year guys, the Ravens' bread and butter is to make those guys absolutely miserable. And look, the Bengals' offensive line did not help things. It was horrible. They didn't pick up protections well. They weren't blocking. It was just a terrible effort by the Bengals' offensive line. And in turn, literally almost got their quarterback killed. And at the end of the game, the white flag just comes up and they said, we're just going to bleed this clock out, make sure that Joe Burrow doesn't get hit anymore, because it was really just that ugly. So we're going to talk about the offense and Lamar Jackson in the first segment against the Bengals defense. We'll talk about the Ravens defense against Joe Burrow and the Bengals offense in the second segment. And then we'll get into another week of AFC scores and standings and what that means for the Baltimore Ravens and the rest of the AFC. So with all that being said, we're going to jump right in here. But before you do that, be sure to follow us on Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Spotify. Anywhere there's a podcast, we are there waiting for you Monday through Friday, 6 a.m. Eastern Time. Also, be sure to follow us on Twitter at Locked On Ravens and my personal account at ChaosRicket34. So with all that being said, we're going to jump right in here. And let's start with the offense that dominated the first quarter and then really just couldn't get anything going after those 4 seconds ticked off in the second quarter. Just 3 points for Baltimore. And honestly, I mean, we have to start with Lamar Jackson, right? 19 of 37 for 180 yards, 2 touchdowns, 1 interception. That's the first thing. 37 pass attempts for Lamar Jackson in this game against the Cincinnati Bengals team that coming into this week was in the bottom third of rush defense. That was an interesting game script by Greg Roman in this Baltimore Ravens offense. Mark Ingram led the way with 11 carries for 57 yards. Devin Duvernay had 1 carry for 42 yards, and J.K. Dobbins had 1 carry for 34 yards. So in the box score, you know, you have Mark Ingram's 5.2 yards per carry average, Gus Edwards 3.6 yards per carry on 7 for 25, Lamar Jackson 2 for 3, 1.5, Devin Duvernay 42 yards per carry, J.K. Dobbins 34 yards per carry. This is a little funny box score tidbit there. It just looks kind of off. But I mean, again, Baltimore did not run the football as much as I thought they would have. 19 total carries between the 3 running backs. Lamar Jackson never had it going on the ground. Not a lot of design runs for him either. And then in the receiving game, Marquise Brown 6 for 77 with a touchdown. He led the team. Mark Andrews 6 for 56 and a touchdown. But outside of that, J.K. Dobbins 3 for 21. Devin Duvernay 2 for 17. Patrick Ricard 1 for 7. Nick Boyle 1 for 2. No receptions for Willie Snead. No receptions for Miles Boykin. We'll talk about that in a few minutes, but that is just, it's just not acceptable, regardless of how Lamar Jackson was playing. That's just, you're not going to take that, and that will not beat good teams in the NFL. I'm not saying Cincinnati's a horrendous team, but they did not play very well today. So, what you have from Lamar Jackson, and I think this, again, all goes back to the play calling. You have a guy in Greg Roman, and you have a guy in Lamar Jackson. These two people, I think, are guys who have heard the criticism, are guys who have heard that, oh, the Ravens can only run the football, they're never going to be able to pass the football, and they've heard it, and they have thus put out on the field a pass-first offense, and I have no idea, zero idea, why that is the Ravens' game plan right now. Lamar Jackson should not have dropped back 37 times in a game that the Ravens controlled start to finish. They never trailed in this game. Baltimore never trailed in this game, yet Lamar Jackson was still throwing midway through the fourth quarter. And look, I'm not saying run on every single play Lamar Jackson throws 15 times a game. That's not what I'm saying. What I'm saying is you have to establish a run game in order to open up the pass game. What Greg Roman is doing right now, he's throwing on first down, running for 3 yards on second down, and throwing on third down. That is not a formula for success, in my opinion. Now, I'm no NFL offensive coordinator, but the Ravens have seen success in the past by establishing their dominance on the ground and running the football. I'm also not saying that Lamar Jackson is not an NFL quarterback and can't throw the football, because he absolutely can. But the play calling right now is doing no favors for Lamar Jackson, is doing no favors for the Ravens offense. If the Ravens just committed to the run a little bit more, if the Ravens were able to just commit a tiny, tiny bit more, I'm sure we would see more openings in the pass game, because defenses would not be able to drop 7 or 8 into coverage. And even when they are blitzing Lamar Jackson, to an extent, they're still getting home, which, to the offensive line's point, they need to play better as well. Although it wasn't a horrible game from them. You know, it was an up and down so-so game. It was okay. But the Ravens, they have to establish the run game. We saw it against the Titans in the playoffs. We saw it against the Chiefs in week 3. When the Ravens do not run the football, they cannot establish their offense, because teams are just predicting what they're going to do, and thus they're able to get at the defensive coverages better. They're able to drop back people into coverage. And, you know, the whole thing with Lamar Jackson is, oh, if you force him to throw the football, you win the game. The Ravens and Lamar Jackson and Greg Roman, I think, are trying to do everything they can to erase that narrative and say, look, we're going to throw it this many times a game to show you that we can win games dominantly by doing it. But this game was a win because of the defense. This game was 100% a win because of the defense. And that's how Eric DaCosta built the defense. We'll talk about it in the second segment. When the offense was sputtering, the defense would be able to go out there and force the opponent to punt the football. That is what happened in this game. And force turnovers. That is what happened in this game. But trying to get rid of that narrative by throwing the ball 37 times a game against the bottom 3 rush defense is not going to do it. In fact, it's going to make the narrative worse, because what we saw was Lamar Jackson struggle to throw the football. And yes, he did not have 2 days of practice last week. That hurts, because you can't get better. You can't get on the same page with your teammates. And it's tough to be off the practice field. Lamar Jackson admitted that. I totally understand that. And I'm not putting this all on Lamar Jackson. Yes, he needs to be better. He knows he needs to be better. He said in the post game that this full week of practice that'll be coming up for him is going to be huge. But Jesse Bates, the Bengals safety, said that the Bengals game plan going into this game was, look, we knew who Lamar Jackson was going to throw to. It was number 15, Marquise Brown, number 89, Mark Andrews. That's exactly what happened. Literally exactly what happened. And credit to those two for going out and showing out yesterday. Even though they were double covered and there were different coverages all throughout the game for them, they still were able to both corral 6 passes each. We did see some bad decision making from Lamar Jackson. That pop-up throw where Mark Andrews had to become a cornerback, that was not a great decision. Probably should have just thrown that one out of bounds. You also saw a few plays where linebackers fooled Lamar Jackson. Lamar Jackson just did not see the linebackers. One resulted in a Logan Wilson interception towards the end of the half. Again, Lamar Jackson in those end-of-the-half interceptions. And another one where Akeem Davis-Gaither got his hands on the ball and almost picked it off. Did not, though. I don't know what that was from him. But again, a good play by Davis-Gaither. Lamar Jackson does need to be better. But I seriously think that the Ravens thing with this is, because I have no good explanation as to why the Ravens did that against the bottom third of the league rush defense. I don't. Mark Ingram struggled for the most part on the day, had 2 nice long runs towards the end of the game. His long was 20. Gus Edwards also struggled. But you're not going to establish anything if you don't run the football. You're not going to open up pass lanes if you don't run the football. Being able to be a dominant run team will open up the pass lanes, and that will, in turn, make this offense a lot more dangerous than it is right now. I do believe that the Ravens need another wide receiver. I mean, Miles Boykin is just not doing it. Good blocker. Has not shown chemistry with Lamar Jackson all season. Willie Snead is a nice veteran, but he's not giving you the production you need right now. He's, again, a good blocker, good fit. The Ravens, you know, there are a few options they could kind of go after, and we'll touch on this quickly before we head into our first break. You have kind of the older stars you could trade for, an A.J. Green, a Julio Jones. You have the mid-tier guys, maybe a Jamison Crowder. You have the young studs that might cost a little more to give up, but you can get more team control with them. Calvin Ridley, Michael Gallup, DJ Chark. I'm not saying it has to be any of those guys. I'm just saying they need another person to be able to stretch the field or to be able to get open, to be able to understand where gaps are in a defense and work situational football. And again, a good blocker as well. Baltimore, I do think they just need somebody because you see Kansas City with the 5-6 offensive weapons. Baltimore, yeah, they have Marquise Brown. They have Mark Andrews. I think Devin Duvernay is going to be a stud. But that's three right now. That's three guys who you can rely on. And I'm not even saying you can rely on Duvernay right now because he hasn't gotten the chance to prove himself. So the Ravens need somebody. They need another veteran. And I think any of those guys could work out. We'll see what Baltimore does. We'll see if they want to value this continuity. And I know that that's a big thing they value. But at the end of the day, I do think Baltimore needs to get better in the wide receiver room. We're going to head into our first break now, but when we get back, we're going to be talking about the defense and their dominant performance against Joe Burrow and the Cincinnati Bengals, so stay tuned for that, and we will be right back. Visa knows that local businesses are the heartbeat of our communities, whether they're our corner stores, our coffee spots, or our favorite shops. Local businesses have always been there for us. They remember our orders. They call us by name, always giving back, making a difference, and going that extra mile to support us and our community. And right now, more than ever, local businesses need our support. So it's time for us to return the favor. The next time you go shopping, make the choice to shop at local businesses and look for the contactless symbol and tap to pay with the contactless Visa to help support your community because where and how you shop matters. Visa, everywhere you want to be. Official partner of the NFL. And we are back with our second segment of this Victory Monday Locked On Ravens episode. Your host, Kevin Ostreicher, still hanging out with you here. We just talked about the Ravens offense in their 27-3 victory over the Cincinnati Bengals yesterday. But now we're going to talk about that defense. And this defense was really the reason why Baltimore was able to win this game. One, by the margin they won it by 24 points. But two, just in general, because without the constant pressure, without the secondary's elite coverage ability, they might have lost this game. I mean, Cincinnati only had to put up 30 to win, 28 to win. So the Ravens' offense sputtered through the final three quarters. Baltimore's defense played a very, very solid game throughout. Joe Burrow went 19 of 30 for 183 yards, averaged 6.1 yards per pass, and had no touchdowns, did throw an interception. But the kicker here is he was sacked 7 times, had a 5.5 quarterback rating. Let's just look at these sack numbers for the Ravens defense. You had Patrick Queen with a sack. You had Chuck Clark with a sack. You had Pernell McPhee with a sack. You had Marlon Humphrey with a sack. Deshaun Elliott with a sack. Marcus Peters with a sack. And Jimmy Smith with a sack. That's 5 defensive backs. The only guys who weren't defensive backs to get a sack on the day were Queen and McPhee. So all of the Ravens starting defensive backs got sacks on the day. I mean, that's really, really good. But it also means that the Ravens pass rush was able to finally get home consistently. And when I mean consistently, I mean literally it felt like every single play outside of a few here or there, which were kind of an anomaly, Baltimore was able to get constant pressure, and it wasn't just one guy free. They were having multiple guys to the quarterback pretty much every single play. It was just a masterpiece to watch. Now, of course, this is not how it's going to go every week. It's just not. Baltimore is going to have better offensive lines than the Cincinnati Bengals. I am a firm believer that Cincinnati's offensive line is the worst in the NFL. It's just this. The Bengals did nothing in the offseason to adjust their offensive line. Nothing. And it's coming back to bite them now. And in turn, Joe Burrow, through the first 5 weeks of this season, has taken so many unnecessary hits that could have been fixed if they took, let's say, Josh Jones in the second round instead of T. Higgins. There are a lot of things that could have been fixed, but the Bengals are now living with that mistake. And I think the Bengals will address it in this upcoming offseason, but right now, they just have to live with it. So Joe Burrow got hit a ton, got walloped, looked like he was just in so much pain, and he's going to wake up for the next week or so feeling like he's been in a car crash, but that's the NFL in general. The Ravens also held the Bengals to just 2.5 yards per carry on the ground. Joe Mixon had 24 carries for 59 yards. That's a 2.5 yards per carry average. I mean, an absolutely dominant performance by this Ravens run defense, which is the strength of this defense, by the way. You're not going to run on this Ravens team easily. The Browns had some success running to the outside, but I mean, that's week one. Now we're in week five going into week six, where we are right now. And for Baltimore, they were able to shore up that outside run defense. And here we are now. Baltimore is a dominant run-stopping defensive unit. Overall for the game, I mean, Patrick Queen, what a performance. 9 total tackles, a sack, a forced fumble, a fumble recovery, a touchdown. This guy does it all for Baltimore. The Ravens were sorely missing that sideline-to-sideline impact speed for the linebacker position, the inside linebacker position. Patrick Queen, he's my pick for Defensive Rookie of the Year right now. Chuck Clark, also with 9 tackles. Him and Patrick Queen led the team. He had that sack, as I mentioned, 2 quarterback hits. I mean, he played a great game as well. And what the Ravens were actually doing is the game kind of went into the second half, was they were putting Chuck Clark and Deshaun Elliott up towards the line, and they were putting Marcus Gilchrist, the safety called up from the practice squad, a veteran, he's played in over 100 NFL games, they put him in the deep, deep back half of the secondary just to prevent thing. And they were sending Elliott on blitzes. They were sending Clark on blitzes and just letting Gilchrist roam in the back half there. And I think that was a really good strategy by the Ravens because, one, it eliminates any big plays, or at least it prevents any big touchdowns. And two, you're able to send an extra blitzer, an extra defensive back off the line. But what that does is it creates confusion for a young quarterback because it's not like they're blitzing every single play. It's not like Deshaun Elliott is coming on every single play or Chuck Clark is coming on every single play. Putting Gilchrist in that back end allows you the luxury of confusing Joe Burrow with confusing looks. You're able to put Deshaun Elliott and Chuck Clark up on the line, and in turn, he's wondering, all right, well, is Deshaun Elliott going to blitz me on this play? Is he going to blitz me here? Is he going to blitz me there? And half the time he will, and half the time he won't, and that's Joe Burrow's battle, is figuring out, oh man, you know, am I in trouble here? Am I going to have a little more time? That was a great adjustment by Don Martindale towards the end of this game to, one, prevent the big play, and two, confuse a rookie signal caller. Jalen Ferguson had 6 tackles, had really good edge contained throughout this entire game. I was very impressed. Pernell McPhee, 5 tackles, 4 quarterback hits. He had his best game of the 2020 season for Baltimore in this one. It was a great performance by him. Then you have Marlon Humphrey, Deshaun Elliott with 5 tackles. Marlon Humphrey with that peanut punch once again. Charles Tillman, the peanut punch. And on Twitter, Sherry, at The Real Sherry, asked me that I should look up the Charles Tillman versus Marlon Humphrey number of punch-outs on the show and keeping track, because he could be up there. Marlon Humphrey could be up there with Peanut Tillman by the time his career is over. And I actually didn't have to look it up because a friend of the show, Cole Jackson, actually tweeted it out before I had the chance. Charles Tillman, in his first 4 years in the NFL, had 8 forced fumbles in the league. Marlon Humphrey, in his first 4 years, and Marlon Humphrey's only 5 games into year 4 right now, he has 6. So Charles Tillman, throughout his career, had 44 career forced fumbles and actually had a year with 10. I mean, that's a crazy stat. Nice find by Cole there. But, I mean, Marlon Humphrey, he's already in the Punch-Out Hall of Fame, in my opinion. I tweeted that out. I mean, he's in the Punch-Out Hall of Fame. How can he not be? Impact play after impact play after impact play. This guy just does it all for the Ravens, and can you give him a second extension? Can you do it? $100 million seems underpaid for him at this point. He's having a phenomenal season, has had a phenomenal career. After being questioned by a lot of the Ravens' flock of, oh, well, they already have corners, they shouldn't have drafted a corner in the first round. Well, that's what good drafting and drafting for the future does for you. It brings you players like Marlon Humphrey. Marcus Peters, 4 tackles, an interception, and his first career sack. And in the run game, I mean, you can't say enough good things about what Derek Wolfe, Calais Campbell, Brandon Williams did. Justin Madubuike made his debut, only accumulated one tackle, but did have a quarterback hit as well. And then a side note here, Otara Alaka, a really impressive linebacker for Baltimore on the special team side of things. John Harbaugh said he's most likely done for the year, which is pretty unfortunate. I actually liked what Alaka was doing on the special teams unit. He had a few nice hits on punts and on kickoffs. He was impressing me, and I was surprised when he made the roster, but I'm glad he made the impact that he did. This is the second season-ending injury for Alaka in his two-year career, so hopefully he'll be able to bounce back. But overall, a dominant Ravens performance on defense, holding the Bengals to 3 points, almost pitching a shutout. And if the Ravens can build on this in future weeks, it'll be dangerous once that offense starts clicking. We're going to head into our final break here, but when we get back, we're going to be talking about the scores around the rest of the AFC and standings and what that means for the Ravens, so stay tuned for that, and we'll be right back. It can be awkward or embarrassing to talk about ED. Usually people brush it off or blame themselves, but Roman is here to get you the advice you want and the help you need with no shame. With Roman, you can get a free online evaluation and ongoing care for ED, all from the comfort and privacy of your home. Getting started is simple. Just go to GetRoman.com/LockedOn and complete an online visit. Just go to GetRoman.com/LockedOn to get up to $50 off your first month of ED treatment, a free online visit, and free two-day shipping. That's GetRoman.com/LockedOn for up to $50 off your first month of ED treatment. GetRoman.com/LockedOn. Built Bar is the best tasting protein bar ever. The improved Built Bar is even more delicious with 6 new flavors like caramel brownie, carrot cake, and apple almond crisp. They're great for the health conscious person. You can lose or maintain weight while indulging in a delicious treat. The bars are low calorie, low sugar, high protein, and high fiber. So be sure to go to BuiltBar.com to use promo code LOCKEDON. You'll get 20% off of your next order. Use promo code LOCKEDON for 20% off at BuiltBar.com. And we are back with our final segment of this Victory Monday Locked On Ravens Edition episode. Kevin Ostreicher still here with you, and we just talked about the Ravens defense and their suffocating performance against Joe Burrow in that Cincinnati offense and the Ravens 27-3 win to move them to 4-1 on the year. But now let's get into the rest of the AFC scores around the league in Week 5. And now the AFC games, not at full slate because we have the Chargers playing the Saints on the regularly scheduled Monday night game today at 8:15, and then tomorrow the Buffalo Bills take on the Tennessee Titans in the Titans' first action since the whole COVID debacle in their facility. So let's talk about the games that did happen yesterday in the AFC, and we'll start in Houston, where the Texans were able to pick up their first win of the season as they move to 1-4 and defeat the Jacksonville Jaguars 30-14. The Jaguars fall to 1-4. Deshaun Watson went 25-35 for 359 yards, 3 touchdowns, 2 interceptions, while Gardner Minshew went 31-49 for 301 yards and 2 scores himself. We next go to Pittsburgh, where the Steelers, after a Week 4 bye, pretty much at the hands of the Tennessee Titans, were able to move to 4-0, beating the Ravens' next opponent, the Philadelphia Eagles, by the final score of 38-29. Ben Roethlisberger, 27-34 for 239 yards and 3 touchdowns, while Chase Claypool had 4 touchdowns for Pittsburgh, 3 through the air and 1 on the ground. Carson Wentz went 20-35 for 258 yards, 2 touchdowns, and 2 interceptions. Next, the Arizona Cardinals defeat the New York Jets, led by Joe Flacco, 30-10. Flacco went 18-33 for 195 yards and a touchdown, while Kyler Murray went 27-37 for 380 yards, 1 touchdown, and 1 interception himself. And what would be considered the surprise upset of the day, the Las Vegas Raiders were able to dispose of the Kansas City Chiefs 40-32. Las Vegas moves to 3-2, while Kansas City falls to 4-1. Derek Carr, 22-31 for 347 yards, 3 touchdowns, and 1 interception, while Patrick Mahomes went 22-43 for 340 yards, 2 scores, and 1 interception for Mahomes. We then move on to another AFC North implication game where the Cleveland Browns beat the Indianapolis Colts 32-23. Baker Mayfield went 21-37 for 247 yards, 2 touchdowns, and 2 interceptions, while Phillip Rivers struggled, only going 21-33 for 243 yards, no touchdowns, and 2 interceptions for him. The Browns moved to 4-1 on the year, while the Colts, they fall to 3-2. And finally, to wrap up this kind of short AFC scoreboard, the Miami Dolphins were able to wallop the San Francisco 49ers 43-17 in a game where Jimmy Garoppolo got benched after throwing two interceptions. Ryan Fitzpatrick went 22-28 for 350 yards and three scores, while CJ Beathard went 9 of 18 for 94 yards and a touchdown after replacing Garoppolo. So the Dolphins, they move to 2-3, while the San Francisco 49ers, they fall to 2-3. So this is a whole nice slate of games that we had. Not a lot, but there were some implications throughout the entire NFL with these games. And of course, we're not going to know the full scale of those implications until the rest of the AFC teams who are scheduled to play in week four do just that. But we do have standings throughout the first 5 weeks here. The Buffalo Bills, pending their game, are currently on top of the AFC East at 4-0, followed by the New England Patriots at 2-2, the Miami Dolphins at 2-3, and the New York Jets at 0-5. In the AFC North, the Pittsburgh Steelers stay atop the division at 4-0, while the Ravens and the Cleveland Browns both have 4-1 records, but the Ravens are on top due to having the head-to-head tiebreaker. And then the Cincinnati Bengals, they're at 1-3-1. In the AFC South, the Titans are 3-0, while the Colts are 3-2. The Texans and Jaguars are both at 1-4, so they are tied for third place in that division, although the Texans do have the head-to-head tiebreaker. And finally, in the AFC West, the Kansas City Chiefs are 4-1, but the Las Vegas Raiders not far behind at 3-2. The Los Angeles Chargers at 1-3, and the Denver Broncos at 1-3 as well. So before we head off here, I just want to talk a tiny bit about the AFC North. There are potentially three playoff teams in the AFC North: the Pittsburgh Steelers, the Baltimore Ravens, and the Cleveland Browns. Now, that's in no particular order. I do expect the Ravens to still win this division. And part of that is because, look, the whole AFC North has a very easy schedule this season. They play the NFC East, which is just a train wreck right now. And also, prayers up to Dak Prescott and his horrific injury. Hopefully he has a speedy recovery, although there's no doubt he is done for the year. Then you have them also playing the AFC South, which has also been a bit of a train wreck for every team, even the Titans, who are 3-0. So what do you make of this? There's a lot to make of it. For one, I personally do not think the Pittsburgh Steelers and Cleveland Browns are as good as their records indicate. Now, I have said that the Cleveland Browns are going to make the playoffs, and I stand by that. I think Cleveland is a very good team, and I do not want to make, you know, this sound like, oh, I'm hating on these two teams because I'm a Ravens. No, that's not what's going on here. The Pittsburgh Steelers, if we look over what they have done in their 4-0 season so far, and before we get into this, the Pittsburgh Steelers and Cleveland Browns have done just what the Baltimore Ravens have done, and that is beat opponents they're supposed to beat. They're supposed to beat bad opponents. That's what makes a good football team. So I'm not saying the Steelers are bad. I'm not saying the Browns are bad. I'm just saying they're not as good as their record indicates. They beat the New York Giants 26-16. The Giants are 0-5. They then beat the Denver Broncos 26-21 in a close game with Brett Rippon as the starting quarterback for Denver. Then this free-falling Houston Texans 28-21, and then the Eagles, who are a meh football team, 38-29. So good for Pittsburgh for beating those teams. Good for them for doing that. I'm impressed with what they've been able to do, and Ben seems to be a lot better than I anticipated him being. But for right now, I have to see Pittsburgh play against a good team. And a good team for me, you know, you can say the same thing about the Ravens. Oh, well, they beat that Texans team, and they beat Washington, and they beat Cincinnati. I think Cleveland's a good football team, and they absolutely routed them 38-6. Yes, they lost to Kansas City, but Pittsburgh and Cleveland aren't beating Kansas City either, so you can't tell me that. Then you look at the Cleveland schedule. Cleveland, I believe, is a better team than Pittsburgh. Of course, they have that loss to the Ravens 38-6. They beat the Bengals 35-20 in what was actually a pretty close game, although the score indicates it was a bit closer than it actually was. Then they beat the Washington football team 34-20. And then they have a close game with the Dallas Cowboys 49-38. And then the 32-23 win against the Indianapolis Colts. So you have the Cowboys in there and you have the Colts in there, but these games were a lot closer than the scores indicate. Again, I could see three teams making it from the AFC North. I do think Baltimore wins the division. With the Steelers and Browns matching up at 1 o'clock next Sunday, I think it's going to be really telling to see which one of those teams are going to come out on top, one in that matchup, but two is what I think will be the second place team in the AFC North. So Baltimore right now has shown me more, has been beating the bad teams they played by a big, big margin. I mentioned coming into week five, they were outscoring their opponents in wins by 12.25 points. You cannot say the same thing for the Pittsburgh Steelers and Cleveland Browns. So I think Baltimore is better than those two teams, but the Browns and the Steelers have been playing good football. I just think the Ravens have shown me more. That's all that I have for you guys today. When we get back tomorrow, it's more Ravens talk from us, so stay tuned for that, and I will see you tomorrow.